Well, Governor, we're going to hang on to your coattails and... and Dick Lugar's coattails and Dan Quayle's coattails and Bill Frazier's coattail, just all the coattails or apron strings we can find, and we're going to carry the state of Indiana. And then come January, when I'm presiding over the Senate, I can look out at Dick Lugar and say, look what we've done for America. Well, I've been here before, as some may know, and some probably haven't forgotten it. You probably have tried, but you haven't forgotten it. I see one of our good former Kansans out here, Lahoma Dennis, whatever the married name is, but still a home to me, one of our great Republican workers in Kansas, who's now privileged to live in your great state. But I guess I first met Orvis back in 1970, and I was here for the gridiron dinner, and I was on one side, and my friend McGovern was on the other side. At least he was my friend before the gridiron dinner, and I think probably since. And then I came back that same year for the annual bean feed, and I'm sorry I can't stay until, what, tomorrow night? But I do like beans, but I just can't stay that long. I noticed you've all had your pineapple juice this morning, and I appreciate that very much. It's a lot better for you than peanut butter, let me say that very clearly. One thing, it doesn't stick to the roof of your mouth, but there are a number of other... And I can say to the housewives in this room, don't buy any peanut butter until next week. It's going to go down. The market's going to fall out about the day of the 2nd, and all the peanut butter will be much less expensive on the 3rd. And those who are in that business will be back at home and otherwise looking around Plains, Georgia. But in any event... I want to talk just a few minutes about why President Ford should carry the state of Indiana. I was asked last night on a scale of 10 how important is Indiana, and of course I said 10. It's just that important. It's a highly important state, and I hope that my visit here, along with the great work of Governor Bowen and others, and the President's visit tomorrow, will underscore and demonstrate our concern about the state, yes. We hope for your faith in the ticket and our faith in the people of Indiana. Now, let me say before I say anything else that I will have an active role to play in agriculture. I know that Indiana is a great farm state, and as the Vice President, President Ford, has indicated, I would play a direct role in agricultural exports and perhaps sort of an international salesman, whatever title you'd want to add to that or characterize in any way you want. But we know that the future of American agriculture lies in the export markets. And I have had 16 years in the Congress, 8 in the House, and 8 in the Senate working on agriculture. And one thing that we really need in the House of Representatives are congressmen from Indiana. And we need Dan Quayle, and we need Bill Frazier. And I was privileged to turn on the TV last night and saw one of Dan's great spots. It was an outstanding spot about what he would do for Indiana. He's going to vote to cut spending. That isn't bad. That would be a change from what we have now from this district, and it'd be a great plus for America. And I miss my good friend Ross Adair. I understand he has the flu, and I hope to call him after I finish. But, you know, some of the liberals in this country, liberal Democrats, when they talk about the political philosophies of two great American parties, we hear some liberal Democrats say that, well, Republicans are very defensive about their beliefs and that we're very sensitive about our philosophy. We even hear it said that we look to the past while they claim to look to the future. And to paraphrase Burke, I do not believe we can look to the future with pride and confidence if we forget to look back, both to understand what we must be worthy of and to be instructed in those principles upon which our nation grew strong and great. So So I'm willing to agree that Republicans are defensive. We believe there is much in our nation worth defending, and that's really what it's all about. Oh, yes, we're defensive. We're defensive. Many generations of Americans have shed blood to defend not simply our land and our people, but our entire way of life, a specific economic system, a specific political system, and a specific set of rules set forth in our Constitution, designed to expand and extend, not reduce, our liberty and our ability to make the most of that liberty. And as we've been willing to defend those values abroad in war, why should we be asked to forfeit them peacefully at home? It is this question which clarifies a distinction between those who believe in big government as a key to the future and those who believe in the unfettered energy, initiative, and genius of the individuals as a key to the future. Oh, yes, we're defensive. We defend the free enterprise system. That's part of the Republican philosophy. We don't offend abuses of that system. Monopoly, price fixing, unfair labor practices, false advertising, violations of good faith with consumers, environmental destruction, or any other practices which corrupt and destroy confidence. No, we don't defend those. But our free enterprise system has provided more prosperity and more security for more people than any other system at any other time or place in history. And what's so bad about that? That's worth defending, and we defend the free enterprise system. In the last 2 years, it's created 4 million new jobs for Americans, and employment, despite the problems with unemployment, are at record levels in America. And it's true, of course, that we also have unemployment. One reason is that more teenagers and women are entering the labor market than ever before, and that's because the economy is strong and the economy is rebounding. And there are opportunities available for teenagers and women. And there should be. That's not an excuse. It's a fact. And we should not allow that fact to be obscured or overlooked in the heated rhetoric of a political year. But I believe, and President Ford believes, and I think others believe who believe in the free enterprise system, that we can best accommodate these new entrants by letting the free enterprise system function properly and not hindering it with inflationary spending policies which retard the growth of business and industry. The free enterprise system creates jobs. Government does not create jobs. We hear all the talk from the welfare candidates, Senator Mondale and others, about the Humphrey Hawkins bill and how the government's going to put everyone to work. The government doesn't create jobs. They may accept within the bureaucracy, and every bureaucrat on a public payroll is paid by your tax dollar. So we don't want to increase public payrolls, and we don't condemn those who are on public payrolls, but we just suggest that in the programs trotted out by the Democrats at their convention and talked about since that would cost the taxpayers over $100 billion. But all we're talking about in most cases are make-work jobs and dead-end jobs that lead to nowhere. As Republicans, yes, we defend the right. The taxpayers have a right to see their dollars spent wisely and efficiently and not wasted on gimmicks and giveaways. We do not believe that the announcement of noble objectives on the part of politicians relieves government of its obligation to use taxpayers' money wisely and in accordance with taxpayers' wishes. And we Republicans defend the right of Americans to be free from government intrusion in their personal lives. And I would ask you to take a look at some of the programs again in the Democrat platform. Everyone nibbles away at your privacy, calls for more government interference and more government control, and one thing the Democrats are always silent about, that's how we're going to pay the bill. They never answer that question, and Governor Carter hasn't answered to this day. Certainly, government has an obligation to provide an environment in which those who cannot help themselves will not be left helpless. But there are many ways to do this. We began as a people who survived and prospered by helping each other, not by turning to government. And that spirit is very much alive in this country today. And I think we should nurture it. We should provide incentives to make it work better. And I don't believe that anyone in this audience, or a great many Democrats or independents for that matter, are going to be misled into believing that a system which was designed to set people free from government can be improved by imposing more government on the people. And that's what Governor Carter proposes to do, and that's what Senator Mondale proposes to do. That violates common sense, and there's a great deal of common sense in America, among Democrats and among Republicans and among independents. And I would just say that, yes, government must be the last resort for those who need a hand. It should not be the first resort, for then we relieve ourselves of our obligation to reach out to each other with encouragement and warmth and compassion. And I think we just have to take a look at some of the other countries in the world. Some of the other countries have tried it, and where it's failed. Many of them, and Sweden's a very good example, are turning back from their expensive, humiliating, and destructive experiments with government programming the lives of their people. Yet there are those in America who still hold up the welfare state as their vision of the future. Oh, yes, and we defend our country. Certainly we defend our country. Our country is not a hostile nation. We're not interested in anyone else's territory, anyone else's riches. We don't seek to enslave others. We do take pride in our role as the anchor of freedom in the world, but we have learned that we cannot be the world's policeman, and we do not defend those policies which steer us in that direction. But on the other hand, and there is another side, the strength of our arms supports our capacity to act for moral ends in a difficult world. The United States has played its role in a slow but steady move toward a peaceful world. And frankly, that's why I find it annoying from time to time, and I've said so, when I hear some of our people in public life attacking the moral stature of our nation and our image and role in the world. I think the acid test is whether or not we're respected and looked up to in the world, and we are, by friend and foe alike, or potential foe. So we take pride in our nation, and we defend America's right to be proud of itself for its role in the world. And we make mistakes in our relations with others. We have in the past, but we have a system which lets us correct our mistakes, and we have the confidence in ourselves to make corrections. And finally, we defend the record which President Ford has established in the past 2 years. It's a great record. It's a good record. It's distinguished, not merely by what it has done, restored confidence in our government, healed the wounds which war and Watergate created in our nation, rebuilt the economy, and extended the work of peace. It is also distinguished by what it has refused to do. And Jerry Ford has not turned away from the American people or sought to place himself above it. He has never refused to take the American people fully into his confidence. We know what he stands for. We know what he hopes that all of our people working together can accomplish. And he has not lost sight of the fact that the glory and grandeur and power of the office of the presidency are a reflection not of the man who holds the office, but rather of the American people themselves. And I believe, and I say it with all the sincerity I can muster, that these values and purposes and achievements, which defend, provide all the evidence necessary of how deeply Republican thought and principle are rooted in the will and the wisdom of our people. So from that standpoint, we are defensive. We defend our honor. We defend our government. We defend the free enterprise system. We defend the American people. And largely because Republicans have faith in the American people. And I can recall in our little debate with Senator Mondale down in Houston, I said, I hope more than one time, that we have faith in the people. We have faith in the American people. We are a party of principle. Our platform was hammered out in Kansas City in the open with the media there. And we have a good platform. A good platform. A sound platform for all Americans. The Democrats, on the other hand, did much of their work behind closed doors. And they have a platform. Oh, what a platform. It calls for 65 new or increased spending programs. It calls for 22 new or expanded agencies to handle increased spending programs. And as I said earlier, we picked out just five of those programs, and the price tag was over $100 billion. So I hear the opposition. I hear the opposition every day insinuating somehow that President Ford has not provided leadership. And I listen and I listen. And I've yet to determine what Governor Carter stands for. He talks about tax reform. He talks about the tax system being a disgrace in America. He indicates somehow or tries to infer that the Republicans somehow have a grip on the Congress of the United States. They've controlled it 22 straight years and 40 out of the past 44. You send us Dan and Bill, you'll help that a lot, too. But that's just one of the problems. They've controlled the Congress. They control the committees. And here Senator Mondale agonize and posturize and moralize about needs of Americans. They've controlled this Congress. They know they've controlled the Congress. They know they've been a dismal failure. They know the liberal policies will not work in America. But they have that same old Hopkins philosophy of tax and tax and spend and elect and elect. But the American people have had enough. And it's not enough for Governor Carter to say on one day our system of disgrace and the next week rush up to New York at a little place called Club 21, where many of you probably have eaten or driven by. It's a place where small businessmen meet, and Governor Carter, of course, being a man of the people, was there. And he was sitting down with lunch with Henry Ford and other little businessmen, talking about the Republican fat cats and all the big businessmen that flocked to the Republican banner, and saying, Henry, don't worry about what I said in my acceptance speech. I'm not going to do anything to tax structure for at least a year. That's this same governor who stands before audiences of the poor and the working men and women in this country and says, our tax system's a disgrace. Let me tell you how bad it is. It's so bad that in 1975, I was permitted to take $41,000 off my taxes. Terrible, but I did it. It's a disgrace, all right. We ought to change the law. I don't suggest he did anything illegal. It's called the investment tax credit. We think it stimulates business and stimulates the economy. But there's just a bit of hypocrisy. Just a bit of hypocrisy to a man seeking the highest office in the land to stand before this audience and berate Republicans and condemn Republicans and castigate President Ford while he's enjoying the benefits of a tax law passed by a Democrat Congress. And so I say it's very serious business we're about. We need your help. Oh, yes, we want your vote, but we also want your manpower and woman power. You know, what is it, telephone and television and tell a woman, and we want to tell the women. We want to tell the women, and we want them to tell their friends and their neighbors just how important it is. And I'll close on a note that I've stressed the past few days. You know, if you were totally undecided, or if you just happened to come to the wrong meeting this morning and really want to leave and hadn't even planned on voting on election day. There may be one or two. That always happens in a crowd this size. A few people go to the wrong room, but even Republicans. But if you're just here by chance, I think you ought to think a moment about President Ford's great leadership. You ought to reflect a moment about your son or your grandson who's going to school or working, not concerned about the draft, not concerned about being hauled out of school or hauled away from his job and shipped off to some far-off country. There are no memorial services scheduled today in Fort Wayne, Indiana, for some body being brought home, some American hero killed in action. There's no one coming home from the hospital back to their hometown with a leg or an arm gone or somehow physically or mentally wounded. That's behind us. It's going to stay behind us as long as we're strong in America. As long as we have strong moral leadership and strong military leadership, when you turn on your TV at night or radio or pick up the evening paper, you don't have a body count to look at, how many Americans were killed, how many enemy, what may happen tomorrow, because we're at peace. Is there anything wrong with being at peace in the world? I don't think so. And President Ford doesn't think so. And we're at peace because we're respected. And we're respected because we're strong. And on the other side of that coin, Governor Carter wants to cut $5 to $7 billion in defense. He won't tell us how. He says it won't affect our strength. This is the very time when Secretary Rumsfeld said we ought to be increasing our defense expenditures by $18 billion. And then my friend and colleague in the Senate, Senator Mondale, who's voted against every new weapon system, who's voted time after time after time to cut the defense budget. He's probably, if the Mondales had had their word in the Senate, there'd be hundreds of thousands of Americans out of work that have lost their defense jobs, whether it be the main tank or the B-1 bomber, the C-5A, or the Trident submarine, or the Poseidon missile. Because he doesn't believe in a strong defense. He believes in a strong welfare system. And it's not enough to take somebody out of their job and say, I'm going to provide welfare benefits for you, because the American worker, the American man, and the American woman want to work. They want dignity. And so as they trot around in these last few days trying to portray President Ford as lacking in leadership and talking about Watergate and talking about the pardon and talking about unemployment, and they're going to do a lot of it. That's all they know. They don't have any vision for America. And it's one thing to stand up and castigate America, as Governor Carter said, and he said we're weak, and he said we're not respected. But he just can't quite come to say that we're not at peace, because we are at peace. And he's got to admit that we're strong in the world, because that's the foundation and that's the key to peace. And he can't deny the fact that President Ford this year in a Democrat Congress, for the first time in 10 years, added real growth to our defense budget. Not just to spend your tax dollars for defense, that's not the purpose at all. It's to keep us strong and keep our respect so that we sit down with the Russians and talk about an arms limitation agreement. We're dealing from strength. Now, I don't want to be number two in this world. We would have been if we'd listened to the Mondales in the Senate. I want to be number one for the sake of peace. And that's what it's all about. And so come next Tuesday, whatever our problems may be, just keep in mind one thing. We're at peace. We have great leadership, a man with experience, and a man with a capacity for greatness, President Ford. Thank you very much.
Press is being cut out here. They're behind the fence here, so they're in.
Oh, well, we'll get up there.
Why don't you, can you turn around to a local press and get it here, too? See, local press is all over here.
All right, we're all over the place.
You got your national press and follow you every day, but these people are here locally.
I follow them every day, right.
This is heavy on free enterprise this morning. Can you tell me how the president's increase of grain price supports a few days ago advanced the cause of free enterprise?
Oh, I think so. I think it's going to keep a lot of farmers in business. It eases up credit, and
the agriculture department said it wasn't necessary.
Well, that's the disagreement they had. But the president made that decision. I think it was the right decision.
Where did he get his advice?
I assume from a lot of sources. I did the best I could.
What did you
recommend? Did you argue in favor of that?
For increasing the loan rates? No, I didn't argue. I just suggested it. And I think most farmers are very pleased about it. I don't know how they feel in Indiana.
I think so, Bob.
Right.
No question.
They don't want to get the loan rates too high where we get back into the grain business. That was the only question. But let's take wheat, for example. The loan rate's still 4 cents below the target price. As long as we don't get into a takeover situation, and we don't do any harm to the free enterprise system.
Why did the Agriculture Department argue that it was not necessary?
I don't know who argued that in the Agriculture Department. There was one person down there, I guess, but it's a big department.
Senator, your Democratic opponent for the vice presidency has charged that... used the word despicable in describing the allegations of prison to you that the Democratic Party was responsible for the World War II. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I don't know. I think Fritz is getting a little tired. I wish this campaign ends so he can get some rest, but I think he'll survive all right. He said last week that neither President Ford nor I were fit to run for dog catcher. High-level campaigning is my reaction.
But the fact remains, Senator, that after you made those remarks, you did substantially modify your position on World War II and Vietnam, did you not?
Well, no, I'm going back to my premise. I didn't want the media to be confused. I said in the debate that if they want to dredge up the past, we can dredge up some of the past. And I'm not responding to Senator Mondale. I'm just looking at his anti-defense record, part of the worst in the Senate of the United States. I haven't modified that. I haven't modified the need for a strong America, and I'm not going to modify that. And I want to remind him every time he talks about unemployment that much of that that great prosperity was based on a war economy.
Are you still calling them Democrat wars, then, Senator?
Pardon?
Are you still calling
never
them
did. Never,
wars
never did. Never.
Well, Senator, when you talk about dredging them up, what's the point of dredging them up if not to attach them to the party?
Just when as they try to attach all of us in the Republican Party to Watergate. Somehow, if we're Republicans and we're alive during that period.
Isn't that your purpose when you talk about dredging something up from the past?
I notice they haven't talked too much about Watergate lately, so I guess it's been effective.
Senator,
I asked if that was your purpose, Senator.
What?
If that was your purpose in saying and talking about dredging things up from the past.
My purpose,
to attach it to the Democratic Party.
I think just to bring it up and take a look at it. I supported the efforts in Vietnam, but I didn't put troops in there.
Senator, could you talk a little bit about how you see your role in this last week of the campaign? That the president is now out on the road and he's going around and sounding a lot of the themes of the party. What can you do? Are you kind of?
I'm sort of kind of going around too.
I mean, what is your role? Are you superfluous, or I mean, what?
No, supportive.
What does it matter,
no, not,
what you're doing?
Well, I hope so.
What does it accomplish?
Well, I think it accomplishes a lot of things. First of all, we have a chance to make a final pitch to our supporters, Democrats, Republicans, Independents. We have 4,000 people show up in Toledo at a shopping center. I think it indicates that there's some interest in what we do. It's a supportive role for the president. I'm no longer the Lone Ranger out here. I've got the head man out here now, and so I'm falling back in, you know, just in a supporting role and a winning role next week. And see, weeks and day we'll be having victory parties. I think I go to Salisbury.
Is that kind
North
of like
Carolina.
Standby equipment, Senator?
Well, I think anyone who has any illusion that we're other than standby equipment, if you're the vice president or the candidate, should take another look at it. I'm perfectly satisfied with that characterization. Standby. We also stand up. Stand up.
Is there anything you think other the president isn't doing? Is there any special thing that you bring to this campaign?
Yes, a very alert, sharp mind.
Senator, how do you see the role of the vice president in the future? Any changes you think should be from the situation?
The vice presidency? I think it's going to be very exciting. I can hardly wait. The president's indicated a couple of specific areas of responsibility in agriculture and the missing in action efforts. I have some interests of my own, but... Again, going back to the question just asked, anybody who feels or has any ideas about making policy as a vice president just has to look around. We're not going to make policy. We're going to do what the president suggests we do and preside over the Senate and vote in case of a tie. And then we're going to elect some more Republicans to the Senate, Dick Lugar and others, and there'll probably be more ties, so I'll have to be a very active vice president.
What's your reaction to the allegations that President Ford acted to stop the initial Watergate program?
I think he's answered that so many times, I don't think I could add anything.
Do you think it's a campaign issue? Do you think it'll make a difference in the campaign?
I think it'll help President Ford a little bit.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to finish that because he has been quizzed so often on Watergate and been investigated by so many sources. I don't think anyone in America, unless they're just totally partisan, or questions the honesty and integrity of President Ford, and that's a plus for him. And maybe all these allegations that have been knocked down again... reinforce that.
But Senator Dole, is Watergate really a campaign issue anymore? Because it's been so long ago and it is over now. Does it really make any difference in the 2016 campaign?
I never thought it had, but Mondale keeps talking about it. He has to talk about something, and he doesn't want to talk about his voting record, so he talks about Watergate. But I'd rather talk about his voting record. That is an issue, his strong anti-defense record, and his wanting to build up grain reserves, depress farm prices. He wants export licenses to cut down on exports of farm commodities. So I guess if you know anything else to talk about, you bring up the past.
Senator, where exactly does President Ford stand on the issue of aid to handicapped people, people in wheelchairs, you know, missing legs, arms, etc.? What has he actually done this year and is pre-elected? What does he plan to do in his next administration?
Well, he strongly supported the Rehabilitation Act passed in 1973. There's more funding for the handicapped. And I'd go back to our platforms. The Republican platform has a full, meaningful paragraph on handicapped and what we hope to do for the handicapped. Democrats have one sentence or two. And I'm on the ticket.
Thank you very much.